This is the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. Each week, Diana Winston, or one of our UCLA Mindful teachers, offers a talk about mindfulness to deepen our understanding and cultivate well-being. Thanks for joining us.
A few weeks ago, I gave a talk on what was called the four beautiful qualities of the heart. And these were four qualities that you can cultivate through your practice, and they're complementary and they work together, and they're incredible. You could spend an entire lifetime cultivating one of these qualities, much less four. And then each week I've been touching on them, or one of the other teachers has. So we had, we talked on, I think Aaron talked on compassion, and one of them is appreciative joy, which I talked on last time. And now I want to do equanimity, which I've talked on quite a bit because it's one of my favorite topics. And I think some of you may be quite familiar with it. And for some of you, it might be newer. So equanimity is the very simplest way to talk about it is it's even-mindedness and balance and non-reactivity in the face of life's conditions, in the face of whatever life brings. So my first exposure to the concept of equanimity came when I was, before I got into meditation practice, or it was like actually the thing that brought me into meditation practice. Some of you know my story, which I've shared in here before, but I was living in India at the time in Dharamsala, and Dharamsala is where the Dalai Lama has the government in exile. And it's a very vibrant town with a huge Tibetan population. And there's, of course, because Tibetan Buddhism, there's all these different Tibetan Buddhist teachings going on in monasteries, and people doing spiritual practice and circumambulating stupas, meaning, you know, walking around religious buildings. And it's kind of like always a festival of teachings and meditation, and it's an incredible place. I highly recommend if you ever get a chance to visit there, although I have not been there in a really long time, so I'm sure it's quite different. I was a young person just out of college trying to figure out what to do with my life, and up until that point I'd been quite driven, very just like wanting to succeed, wanting to do well, wanting to get attention for how well I was doing with my teachers. And I was very type A, very, very driven. And when I ended up in India, and I was trapped, first I was traveling around, I was going to the Taj Mahal, I was doing sort of typical traveler things. And then I ended up in Dharamsala, and I was not interested in the meditation teachings. I was not interested in the Buddhist teachings at all. I was at that point very strongly identified as an activist, and I didn't know if it was possible that meditation would be the opiate of the masses, for instance. But anyway, after a while, I think it was a very strong case of peer pressure, because everybody was meditating and it just made me interested. What are they doing? And I finally ended up taking a course after several months of being there. I ended up taking a 10-day meditation course. Now, some of you have done a 10-day silent retreat in the insight meditation tradition, or a 5-day, or you've done retreats with me. This style of teaching is different in the Tibetan style. There's many different lineages in Tibetan Buddhism, but this particular style was a contemplative retreat. And what that meant was they would give you a theme and they would teach on a theme, and then your job was to think about that theme. So one day they were giving a teaching on what's called the 8 worldly winds. And the 8 worldly winds is a very sort of famous teaching in Buddhism about the nature of reality, that essentially we are constantly being blown about, and this is a metaphor, it means our minds are being impacted and sort of buffeted about by these wins, and these wins are four pairs, right? So there's gain and there's loss. There is success and failure. There is pleasure and pain, and there's praise and blame. And what happens is we seek madly after the positive one, and then we're very happy when we get the positive one, when we get gain and success and praise and pleasure. Fantastic. But then what happens is, because life is life, that things change, and sometimes that gain turns to loss, or success turns to failure, praise turns to blame, pleasure turns to pain. And then we're at sea, right? We're doomed to be blown about by our reactivity, because, oh no, we lost the good one, and now we, how am I going to get it back? I need the, I, you know, I'm suffering, right? So I heard this teaching, and it was sort of describing reality, and I thought, this is so interesting, because this really describes my life. That I was always seeking the positive and running after the negative. And in particular, for me, the one that spoke to me was the praise and blame. That I was chasing after praise and running away from blame. And what this does is it creates a kind of disturbance in the mind, like a windstorm, right? It's like we're constantly running for the good one, running away from the bad one. And there's got to be a different way. And this is what the teacher then talked about. She said that there is a different way, we'll just say that, and that way is a mind that can be okay no matter what is happening in life. Whether we have the negative or the positive, the mind has the capacity to stay solid, stable, balanced, even-minded, no matter what is happening. And this is the quality of equanimity. And then I just thought, I want some of that. That's what I want. How do I get it? And then her next comment was, you get it through meditation. And that sold me. That was it. That was the beginning of my journey. And I just knew. And you know, you're a young person, and it was like, for me, it was like something really spoke to me profoundly inside, that there could be a different way, that I didn't have to be at the mercy of the winds of change, and that I could find a place of stability and capacity and ability to weather whatever life was going to bring. So that this is this quality of equanimity, as I said, even-mindedness, balance, non-reactivity. Non-reactivity is an important way to think about it, because reactivity is the, I define it as acting out of our habitual patterns without consciousness. And so non-reactivity is when we're responsive, when we're not at the mercy of things, when we're not just, you know, someone, we're driving and someone cuts us off and then we shout, "You jerk." That's reactivity. Non-reactivity or responsiveness would be pausing, breathing, noticing, knowing the impact, paying attention to our impulses, maybe making different choices. This is non-reactivity, or we can call it responsiveness. So a mind of equanimity is a mind of non-reactivity. A mind of equanimity is a long-enduring mind. A mind of equanimity, and there's this lovely definition from a teacher named Shinzen Young. Some of you may know him. He calls it, he says, radical non-interference with the natural flow of subjective sensation. It's kind of a meditative definition, because the idea is when you're meditating, that there's all this stuff happening, right? And happening in your mind and your body. We were exploring sensations today, but there's thoughts coming and going, emotions coming and going. And this radical non-interference is the allowing things to come and go, and not feel like we have to fix or change or make different. And so that's from a meditative perspective. But from a just daily life perspective, we're all trying to control things all the time. I mean, everybody wants things to be pleasant. We want those good things of the four of the eight worldly winds. We want those, and there's nothing wrong with that. That is profoundly human, to want pleasure and success and gain and praise. Of course we want that. And we can learn to have a mind that doesn't our happiness doesn't depend on getting those things. That there's a deeper happiness that can be within us that comes from this willingness to be with things as they are, this quality of equanimity. Now, you may be a person who has a lot of equanimity, and there's a lot of people in the world who are like that. They handle whatever situation, they're super calm, they're present, whether or not they meditate, but they just are kind of those kind of people. And then there are many of us who are not those kind of people. There are many of us who find ourselves just, captured by the world and in our dramas and lost in our worries and concerns, and the feeling of equanimity feels very far away. But the good news is that it's available to us all, that we can practice it. And that's what the science of neuroplasticity has, it says, that is so incredible, is that we can change our brains. And so even if you are a person who considers yourself, I don't have a lot of equanimity, it is available to you through practice and repetition, which ultimately leads to the building of new neural pathways and the pruning of ones that are not used, until there is more and more of an actual experience of this quality of equanimity. Sometimes we have equanimity one day and not the next. Sometimes we have equanimity in the exact same situation that we didn't have the day before. I mean, I remember, just this is a kind of a long ago, but I remember it so clearly because it was such an interesting thing to watch my mind, that when my daughter was a baby, and she would wake up in the middle of the night, and I some t nights she would wake up in the middle of the night, and I would be like, no problem, I'm totally here. My mind would feel undisturbed. I would, put her back to sleep in very calm and equanimous ways. And other nights I would wake up in the middle of the night and I would rage. Why are you awake? I can't believe this. Having a baby, this sucks. What, like there would be like all these kinds of reactivity. So to the exact same situation. And now that's a kind of like a dramatic situation from a long time ago, but this is happening all the time. Some days where we have it, some days we don't. And again, nothing is wrong with that, but we can cultivate a mind that has more and more leaning in the direction of equanimity, leaning towards more balance, more non-reactivity, more ability to weather the changes, the ups and downs of life. The world right now is pretty crazy. It is a, I don't know. I feel like I've been teaching for 30 years and I always say the world is really crazy and there's so many difficult things happening. It feels like it is pretty bad right now. And there is no greater quality that I try to develop than equanimity, this capacity to be okay, even with all of the stuff that is happening in the world. Now, equanimity is not apathy. Equanimity is not disconnection. This is a mistaken view. Okay, if I'm equanimous, it means, hey, it's all good. It doesn't matter that there's war. It doesn't matter that there's violence perpetrated. It doesn't matter there's discrimination. No, because I'm cool, I have equanimity. That is a really wrong view and wrong understanding. And it's kind of what's sometimes referred to as a spiritual bypass. It's like I like to call it the bliss ninny. The bliss ninny is the person who's living in bliss and pretending that or whatever, they think everything is all right, it's all good, but they're actually not acknowledging the truth of suffering in the world. And they're not compassionate because they're lost in their drama about how great they are and how much peace they have, peace of mind they have. So we don't want to be that. It is not apathy, it is not disconnection, it is true depth of a heart that is able to hold what is happening and go, this too is happening, and I can be here for it. And when we can come from that place of equanimity instead of reactivity, and I'm talking in relation to either political issues or what's happening in our lives, the more we can connect with the equanimity and act from it, the healthier and saner our actions are. because they're not coming from the reactivity. I'm so overwhelmed and horrified by what I read in the news. I'm just gonna shut everything down and not learn about it. And that's the end, which, it's not the worst strategy in the world, but it's a reactive strategy versus maybe finding a different kind of strategy of when you're coming from a place of, I can calm myself down. I can connect with myself. I'm going to only read the news, for instance, when I am feeling completely centered. That's my practice. Or I'm only going to read the news for 30 minutes. That's my practice. But those are choices that come from equanimity rather than from reactivity. Actions. When people can act from a place of equanimity, it's often more effective than the ones coming from reactivity. So just to say a little bit, they've researched equanimity. They kind of I don't think there's been studies on equanimity exactly, but there's been studies on like adjacent states of mind. So states like a reactivity, emotional reactivity are looked at. So what's sometimes called dispassion, like paying attention to whether people get caught up in things. And what they find is that people who have higher levels of equanimity have reduced emotional reactivity, which would be a good guess, greater prefrontal regulation. So remember, the prefrontal cortex is the what we think of as the CEO of our brain. It's responsible for executive functioning, delayed gratification, working memory, flexible thinking, impulse control. People who have more equanimity seem to have greater prefrontal regulation and also an increased capacity to stay present under stress. I've been teaching these practices a lot in the last number of months, and I've been doing a we're doing a research study on for physicians on these four beautiful qualities. We're not calling it that. I think we're calling it four. It's called BEST, Building Emotional Strength Training, because you got to kind of call it something like that for these research studies. But we're teaching them kindness, self kindness for self, compassion for others, how to work with that and not get burned out in that way. Appreciative joy and celebrating your successes, and equanimity because of all that physicians face. It's so incredibly challenging. So, how do we find a mind that can help us be present under stress? And I think we haven't looked at the data yet. We still have a few cohorts to go, but I'm sort of feeling like equanimity is the most popular with the doctors. We'll see. How do we get equanimity? How do you develop it? Sometimes it's available just in life by noticing things that and having more equanimity. So noticing the cycles in life, that things come and go. And one of the most famous lines of equanimity ever is, "This too shall pass." And when you remember this too shall pass, you are evoking equanimity. We can commit to it, to turn to it rather than to turn to our dramas. We can be really ask ourselves, what kind of, I often say this to you, what kind of mind do you want to have? Do you want to have a mind that's all churned up, or do you want to have a mind at peace? Now, it's not like we can always control our reactivity. We can't. And in fact, a lot of what we learn with our when we pay attention to our mind is how much of it is not in our control. But what is in our control is our relationship to it. So when we are having a lot of anxiety, can we calm ourselves down? Can we notice, oh, anxiety is arising? What am I feeling in my body? Rather than, so that's equanimity, right? Like holding it, this capacity to hold it, rather than, oh no, I'm so anxious. What am I going to do? This terrible thing is going to happen, right? That's being lost in our equanimity, in our not equanimity, in our anxiety. I've told this story for forever, but I'm going to tell it anyway because I think it's a good example of developing equanimity. And maybe there's some new people you haven't heard it yet. When I spent a year living as in a monastery in Myanmar, in Burma, meditating, and it was a hard time for me. There were a lot of very difficult conditions, things like lots of heat, some challenges with the food. There were snakes and spiders and scorpions and creepy crawlies. And so there was a lot of me dealing with stuff I did not like. I did not have much equanimity at all. And about a couple months into it, I started getting it, then I was there, I came in the fall. Anyway, at a certain point, it was just mosquito season, and there were just mosquitoes everywhere, and they would come out at night. And so I had this, they have these kind of cool, like, mosquito nets that you wear as a hat, right? It comes out, you've probably seen them on TV, or maybe you have one, but it would go all the way down. So it would cover your whole body, and you could kind of do walking meditation in your like mosquito net hat. And we would sleep in big mosquito nets, and you could meditate in mosquito nets, but the mosquitoes would get in no matter what, and especially at dusk. So I was supposed to, what I was supposed to be doing at the meditation center was I was supposed to be meditating, as you could probably guess. And so I would do sitting meditation and walking meditation, breakfast, sitting, walking, lunch, sitting, walking, till the end of the day, because you don't get dinner when you are living in those monasteries. They just have two meals a day, and that's the rule. And I was a Buddhist nun, so that was the deal. But anyway, after a while, the mosquitoes were getting so horrible that I started designing mosquito traps. I came up with some great ones. So first I took this big bucket of lake water and I put it in the center of the room and I waited for the mosquitoes to land on it. And then I covered it up and I ran out the door with it and the mosquitoes flew away, but it didn't work that well. And then I had the little hut I was staying in and didn't have screens. So I started putting, it had screens, but then it had holes in the wall, I guess, for ventilation. So I started covering those up with magazines and like gluing them to the wall. And then I was boiling because it was like over 100 degrees. So anyway, you can imagine it was not very successful. I finally found the best mosquito trap, which was I would turn the, it would do it at night, turn the light on outside, stand by the window, turn the lights off in my room, and I would literally yell at the mosquitoes, "Come and get me." You know, they were flying to the light, but I would yell, "Come and get me," just for fun. Although I wasn't supposed to talk, but I would kind of whisper it. And they would come flying towards the window, and I'd open the window, and out they would go, and I'd slam the door and the window, and I would be so happy they'd escaped. Well, you can kind of guess the problem about this, right? And the problem was that I wasn't meditating. I was designing mosquito traps. I was sitting there contemplating, thinking, planning. And it's at some point of doing this for days and weeks, it occurred to me that I could design as many mosquito traps as I could. But in the end, there's always another mosquito. And when I saw that, because of course they would always come back, I realized that it's not about fixing the external circumstances here. It's about finding a mind that could be okay even with the mosquitoes. And this was the beginning of equanimity for me. This was the beginning of me being able to say, okay, can I be with the mosquitoes as they are? It's a tall order. A lot of mosquitoes are hard, but my mind began to shift. And then I would sort of use that as a phrase. Every time I would notice myself losing my equanimity, I would say, "There's always another mosquito. There's always another mosquito." And I invite you, you're welcome to use that. Take it home with you. So equanimity is this profound, is we can turn our mind. There's always another mosquito. Equanimity is also cultivated through mindfulness practice, through the act of sitting at what I think what was the definition from Shinzen Young, sitting with this radical non-interference with the natural flow of subjective sensation. Sitting, meditating, moment after moment, thoughts, fears, anxieties, beautiful thing, all of this coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. And we sit there, right? We sit there and we notice, we witness, and we don't try to fix and we don't try to change. Obviously, you make adjustments if you need to, but as you do that, even as you sit through heartbreak, even as you sit through body pain, even as you sit through loss, through anger, through fear, the mind begins to automatically develop equanimity. This is the result of mindfulness practice. And having worked with thousands and thousands of people over the years, I have seen people transform and have more equanimity, and it is beautiful. So just know you're doing it already. The third way is that there are cultivation practices, and we'll do this after in a few minutes, but there are cultivation practices where you do an equanimity meditation, where you contemplate the times that you've had equanimity and what that felt like in your body, where you use phrases like things are as they are, may I be with things as they are. And so this is a beautiful way to work with it. We're gonna practice with it in a second. So the last couple of things I'll say is that sometimes it's really hard to have equanimity, no matter how hard we try. Like those nights back in the day when I would wake up with my daughter and I would want to have the calm, even-minded qualities, and instead I would be like raging. So there's something about the magic of having equanimity with no equanimity, which is not an easy thing to do. But can I be okay with the fact that I kind of don't really have equanimity right now? That's sort of the invitation. So you can play with that as we explore equanimity. As we practice, we meet the changing conditions of the world with balance, with even-mindedness. We surf life's changes. Not fighting them, not trying to control them. And at the same time, we take action that's rooted in clarity and calm and the wisdom of equanimity. Our hearts are open. We have qualities that are, we find that inner resource to help us meet life's mosquitoes and also to meet the worldly winds of life. When the praise and the blame comes, we're not knocked about. We are solid. We have got to develop qualities like equanimity in this time. So that's my little pep talk at the end there. Let's do it, I guess is my point. So I'm going to pause for a moment and just see if there are any questions about equanimity, and then we'll do the practice or anything I said. I'll give you a moment in case people want to chat, or if you have a question, you can come on the camera, your choice. Okay, so someone asked a good question. I want to make sure I ask, answer this. It's not actually about equanimity, but it's a meditation question. Let me get to that. I did a slightly different meditation than I normally do, so I can see why it was a little confusing. She said, for the initial meditation, I had a hard time choosing the anchor, current pain, sounds, or breath suggestion. Okay, so the first of all, what the anchor in meditation is that which we always return to, which is typically, so when your mind goes astray, you come back, you bring it back to your anchor. Just like a ship has an anchor, throw the anchor out, stops it from being tossed and turned by the waves, we can have a meditation anchor. We want the anchor to be neutral. So you don't want to use pain as your anchor. Why not? Because if you keep coming back to your pain, you will get exhausted and miserable. So don't use pain as your anchor. Whether you should use sounds or breath, it's up to you. So a lot of people use the breath in either their abdomen, their chest, or their nose. And some people use sounds as they come and go. So if you're new and you're just starting out, I recommend try different anchors and see if one clicks with you. And don't worry about, oh, should I Do I have to pick one right away? It might take time with your practice till you come to the one that would be the one you land on, and then just stay with it. And it's helpful to stay with the anchor because then it becomes your constant companion. So I've been noticing my breath in my belly for, I don't know, many, many years. And when I'm anxious, boom, my mind just goes there because it knows to do that from meditation. Someone like the mosquito story, put equanimity into perspective. What are the three ways of developing equanimity? Meditation, being okay with not having it, and what is the third? Well, what I was saying is noticing it in life. Like I started to notice that there's always another mosquito, but we can notice it. Oh, the cycles, the changes, things are coming and going, right? So noticing it in life, the meditation. And then the third is, there are deliberate cultivation. Sorry, let me clarify the second. Noticing it in life, the second being mindfulness meditation. And the third is there are specific meditation practices that have that cultivate meditation equanimity. And that's what we're going to do in a few minutes. The concept of being okay with not have equanimity, being equ having equanimity with no equanimity, that's just a kind of added point. Okay, equanimity sounds great until your colleagues do something seriously annoying. True. But seriously, if you're in a not great situation, how subjective is it if everyone knows it's bad? Just an example, but maybe getting enough peace of mind while you figure out a better way or place. You don't want to be the bliss ninny, as you called it, if it's not great. So wait, I want to make sure I'm understanding the question. Oh, I see. Okay. So it sounds like what you're describing is you're in a work situation and it's not good. And so and everybody knows it's not good. So it's not just you experiencing that, but everybody's having a hard time. So the question, I'm going to rephrase this and tell me if I get your question, and you can ask me again if I don't. But sometimes the question is like, do I stay or do I go? How do I deal with this situation with equanimity? Do I cultivate more tolerance and ability to be with the difficult work situation? Or do I leave because I've had it up to here? And there's not a right answer to this. It's sometimes life reveals itself to you like, okay, I've had it, I need to go. Other times you're able to work with it. And so one thing about equanimity is we don't want to be like a doormat, like, please, I have so much equanimity. Please be abusive towards me, right? Like, no, absolutely not. And that's so if the situation is harmful, we probably want to get out or find a way to change it or stop it. Some people often ask me when they're meditating, and they have a lot of pain, should they sit with the pain or should they move? This is a great question. It doesn't even have to be pain. It could be an itch. Should I scratch the itch or should I be attentive to the itch and notice it with my mindfulness? And this is really an interesting question about equanimity. What I usually say is that it depends. If you have a lot of energy in your body and mind, a lot of curiosity, and you're really kind of grooving along in your meditation and you start to get an itch or pain, it's a really helpful thing to pay attention to it. Oh, the itch, it's growing, it's expanding, it's tingling, there's little edges to it, right? And notice it, or the same thing with the pain. However, an itch or a pain can be awful. So, and another time, if your mind does not have a lot of energy, you're feeling exhausted, you're feeling kind of grumpy, the last thing you want to do is sit with pain or an itch, in which case, move. It's fine, totally fine. But do it with awareness, shift with intentionality, knowing you're going to move your posture. It's a lovely way to practice. And I think it kind of gives us a microcosmic look in how do we deal with a big situation where it might be really hard for us, really challenging. Okay, do I stay with it? Do I develop more equanimity? Do I tolerate it more, or do I make a change? And that's really, really, there's no right answer, but the investigation is the process. Okay. So Donna asks, is equanimity the practice of being okay today in a particular circumstance, but being able to change the circumstance as possible? Do you mean as soon as possible? Is that what you mean? Or if possible? Because that kind of changes how I would answer the question. Well, if possible, yeah. So let me repeat. Is equanimity the practice of being okay today in a particular circumstance, but yet being able to change the circumstance if possible? I think that's a kind of one way to talk about it, right? That equanimity has that capacity. And then there's this added knowing facility that's not equanimity itself, but it's when our wisdom kicks in and we go, I can be with this as it is, but maybe in the long run, it's not the right thing to be with. And therefore, I might want to find a way to change it. But sometimes we can't change it. So we get to practice equanimity, right? We're in a situation like, you have a difficult relative who's going to be your relative for pretty long time. So we can't get out of that situation. We can't stop seeing them or talking to them. So then it's more about developing the equanimity. And then in other situations, it might be that from a mind of equanimity, we can make different decisions to address a difficult situation. Does equanimity also involve some form of awareness? Because we are getting, well, equanimity has awareness within it, or we can say that within mindfulness is equanimity. The definition I use, paying attention to our present moment experiences with openness, curiosity, and a willingness to be with that experience. That is equanimity. So it takes awareness to even know that we're in a situation where we don't have equanimity. And then we can bring in the equanimity. We can bring in the mindfulness of the situation, which has the equanimity. All right. I want to do, oh, I'm going to tell you one more mosquito story about absence of equanimity or equanimity, and then we'll do a meditation. I like this. Ronald said, to use your analogy, is equanimity like the CEO of the four qualities of the heart? I think that's great. I had never thought of it, but I think so. It's the one that's sort of making sure everything is balanced and it can help be, it can kind of be in charge. I think that's a good analogy. When I was meditating also in the monastery, I decided one day that I was going to practice as much equanimity as I could with mosquitoes. So I went out and I sat in the middle of mosquito hour on the deck of my little meditation hut. And I decided I would have this just tremendous mindfulness as this mosquito comes, coming down, 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 lands on my arm and starts to suck the blood. And I just sat there and it just started sucking the blood and sucking the blood. And I sat there and I just be with this, Diana, be with this as it is. And I breathed and I thought to myself, it's hungry. She's hungry. She needs this blood. Okay, I can be with it. And I was in so much equanimity. And then it finally finished and it flew away. It was gigantic. They blow up, right? When you let them, they blow up. It got really big and it was drunk and it was flying like this, kind of like it was drunk and it was flying away. And I just was so proud of myself. I had so much equanimity. And then the next thing I know, it goes zoom right back and takes another bite. And I'm like, that's it, I'm done. So I failed. Okay, let's do the equanimity practice. We're going to take a few minutes here to just settle in. And your mind may be racing about, so why don't we do just a minute or two of noticing our body, breath, heart, mind. Notice what's alive for you right now as we go into some silence. So I'd like us to start by bringing to mind, after me talking about equanimity, a time when you had equanimity. See if you can remember a time when you had equanimity. Now, this doesn't have to be a big dramatic moment. It could be truly anything. It could be a very simple thing where you handled a situation better than you expected, where you there was a person who you have difficulties with and you were able to be present with them, where you were any kind of situation, or maybe it could be an aspect of yourself or some other person, but you dealt with it with equanimity. And bring that situation to mind. Where were you? Do you remember what you can you see where you were, sense or feel? What could you hear? Who was with you? And most importantly, how did you feel? When you handled this situation, when you dealt with this thing or this person, how did it feel? Maybe you can feel some solidity in your body, maybe a little pride, smile, strength, solid. And let's say something to kind of cement that memory. We can say something like, I handled this with equanimity. I could be with things as they are. I could be with you as you are. I handled this with ease and balance. Or you can find your words. So, whatever words you want to say to cement that memory, to feel that feeling and remind yourself using language as well as the memory and the feeling. I handled this with equanimity. I could be with things as they are. And breathe, noticing how you're feeling, noticing this quality. And we're going to shift now to something that is a little bit harder. So, someplace in your life right now where you do not have equanimity, or you think maybe maybe it's just hard. It's like it could be with a person, it could be some event, it could be some aspect of yourself. Please don't pick the hardest thing. Unless you've done this practice before, then go for it. But if you might want to not pick some awful world event that's overwhelming. Pick something simpler. So bring this thing to mind. It might be an aspect of yourself you don't have equanimity with, a person who's making you upset, a situation. Bring it to mind. And as you think about it, how do you feel inside? Maybe there's a contraction. Maybe your face crunches up. Maybe there's a tightness in your chest or abdomen, solar plexus. So just breathe. And we're going to say some words and try them on to see what happens. Things are as they are. May I be with things as they are. And as you say these words, you might remember how you were able to do it in the past. And invite in that quality, but be real because if it doesn't come, then don't worry about it. Just notice what happens. Things are as they are. May I be with things as they are. You are as you are. May I be with you as you are. Some people use the language of acceptance, like, may I accept things as they are, may I accept you as you are. Some people don't like that language. I am as I am. May I accept myself just as I am. And as you say the words, something's going to land, I hope. And it might be something else, like you might just say, this too shall pass. Or may I handle this with ease and balance? May I know I'll get through this? May I find the depths of equanimity within me? Things are as they are. May I learn to be with things as they are? So, as you're saying these words, see if you can land on something that might make sense in your mind that fits your situation. And just notice what you're feeling in your body. And breathe. May I be with things as they are? May I handle this with equanimity? And notice what you're feeling. And maybe you're feeling a glimmer of equanimity. And if you are, really let that be here. Or maybe you're not. If you're not, notice what is here. We can say, for whatever it is I'm feeling right now, may I hold this with equanimity, with kindness? So that's the equanimity with no equanimity, right? Or to say, may I hold this with kindness? I will get through this. And now, if this was a difficult situation, and you maybe you're feeling a little bit of ease or equanimity balance from it, ask yourself, invite in your wisdom, is there something I need to do in this situation, something to do to make change? Is there something I need to say to someone? Is there a change I need to make? Is there an action I want to take related to the situation? What does your mind of equanimity and wisdom say? Noticing how you're doing. You're going to bring the meditation to a close. Feel your feet on the ground. Take a breath. Things are as they are. We'll open our eyes or end the meditation. All right. Well, we'll take, we have like just 5 minutes. So if, come back into the room. If there are any shares or questions about that practice, we can do so now and you can put it in the chat. Just take a few minutes. I'd love to hear how that went. Are there any equanimity meditations and recordings available? Yes, probably 20 or 30 on the UCLA Mindful app. Good invitation for advertising. Hold on, I'm going to open it up for you. We have the UCLA Mindful app. It got a new makeover. If you go to the part of it called listen, there is a quick search bar and then it says, and then you just put in equanimity and you'll get probably 30 meditations. Meditations, lectures, there are all sorts of things in there. So definitely check out the UCLA Mindful app if you're not familiar with it. Donna found it helpful. Really relaxing meditation this evening. And you like the new app. Thanks, Brenda. I'm glad to hear. I haven't really heard from people, so I'm glad that you like it. Marielle.
Thank you. Sort of a complex question for the chat, but I was thinking about equanimity and the passage of time. So I think sometimes I'm getting a little better at finding equanimity in the midst of a stressful situation and sort of de-escalating it. But then sometimes we find ourselves thinking about that situation later, even if the person is not there. And it's like somehow the equanimity is lost. It's like, wait, now I'm really worked up. So does that mean that it was fake equanimity? Or how does equanimity and time kind of is my question.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're just like that, right? You know, we can have equanimity at one moment and then it's just gone. And it doesn't mean that there's something wrong with us or anything. It just means that it's when we start to develop equanimity for some of us, it's fragile, right? It's just kind of, it's and then it's like new. It's a newborn little chick that we want to protect, and then at some point it's going to grow and get stronger and be a big chicken. I don't know why I'm using that analogy, but when you're just working with it, it's going to come and go, and it's going to be easily disturbed, and it's totally okay. You just keep working with it. So it's very natural that it happens, and not to be discouraged at all, really. Okay.
Thank you.
Suda.
Yeah, I had a kind of similar situation. My neighbor used a lot of water, and we are in a drought right now. And I was telling her last almost year not to use a lot of water, but she wasn't listening. So I kind of told her that HOA doesn't like, and they're going to do audit and all that stuff. And then she stopped using it. And then I feel so bad, because she stopped completely using it. And then I was like, I started thinking about it, that maybe she has an OCD about cleanliness. And is that make any sense? I mean, I'm just thinking about that. Does that make any sense for the equanimity? I was thinking that I might be very close to having equanimity, but it looked like I just lost it.
Oh, you know what? Well, I mean, it doesn't sound like you have lost your equanimity. It sounds like someone said it shows you were being compassionate, like you were thinking about what's really going on inside her and why she may not be able to understand how to, deal with this situation. So remember these four qualities of the heart, they come in different ways. So sometimes it's compassion that's front and center. Sometimes it's equanimity. Sometimes it's joy. Sometimes, right? So I mean, to me, it just sounds like you're working with it and you're paying attention. And the more you work with it and notice your own mind and your frustration and come back to your mindfulness practice, you will cultivate equanimity. And I have a feeling sort of the right action will emerge. Yeah.
Thank you. I thought I had to start all over again.
No, you're fine. Okay, so we need to close in a moment. There's just a reminder, Serena put in the chat our upcoming calendar of events. We have the main thing coming up is on Saturday. I have a day long on working with judgments. We worked out did judgments in here a couple of, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and then people liked it so much that I decided to do a whole day. So there's going to be a whole day where we focus on it. If you want to join, it's still available for registration. And then we mentioned the UCLA Mindful app. And I think that's it. So I'm wishing you all lots of equanimity with whatever you're dealing with in life. Okay. Oh, someone reminded us if you want to do the day long, but you can't attend on that day, you will get all the recordings. So you could do it on your own pace. Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. Take
Thank
care.
you. Thanks for listening to the UCLA Mindful Weekly Lecture. For more information about our classes, workshops, and retreats, please visit uclahealth.org/UCLA Mindful. Join us each week for a new session on mindfulness.